Show with your host, Lonnie Clark. We stand together and accept that we now live in a world transformed by Fukushima. Monday, Wednesday, and Friday from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m. Pacific Standard Time here on UCY.TV Radio. We relentlessly engage every ear that listens. We expose and confront the complete lack of accountability for the nuclear industry. Consider social engineering programs who view our bodies, minds, and souls as assets on a balance sheet. We discuss vital current issues, interview activists, and engage our audience in an effort to allow all voices to be heard. The Age of Vision radio show creates a venue that all will choose. We encourage our listeners to reclaim their power and their courage to take action and save our planet from the ravages of greed and indifference. Our actions matter. Every voice matters. We remind our listeners that happiness is resistance. Love is greater than fear. Good morning, UCY.TV radio listeners. This is Lonnie Clark with the Age of Fission radio show. Thank you for joining us. Today is February 20th. I can't actually believe it's gone so by so fast, but it is. It's February 20th, 2017. Today we have joining with us a friend of our show, Larry Bergen from St. Louis. He was highlighted in the first Secret City. Good morning, Larry. Thank you for joining us. We really appreciate you being here every few weeks. It really does help us keep us understanding that what happened in St. Louis didn't just stay in St. Louis. It really spread around the region, and we really appreciate you giving voice to that.
Well, speaking to you now and then is very helpful for getting this word out, and a whole lot cheaper than a therapist.
Well, good. Well, I hope it does more than just therapy, because really what we want is we really need to pressure our elected officials to actually do something for the people in that region. I mean, immediately.
And again, you know, we're working over here in St. Louis on the Illinois side of this river to accomplish the same goals that we are all across the country. You know, get recognition to a problem, then do the proper step protecting the people or finding help for them, and then and removing any radioactive waste or any contamination left by these corporations. A lot of them are given a carte blanche into processing and disposing this radioactive material. But, you know, again, that burden then falls upon the citizens and the people all across the country who have to deal with this radioactive waste and its aftermath. And it being present today, I guess it would be appropriate to talk about the political aspect of all this radiological material being processed from its concept from the 1930s.
Yeah.
Perfect. Yeah. Now, you know, when this was first thought of as a miracle rock, when he first discovered it, it wasn't much longer that it took someone to think of it as a weapon. See, so its first concept wasn't used as a cure-all or medical or nuclear medicine as today, but it was designed to kill. And there's a reason for that is it's very easy to do that. It's the nature of this, the alloy itself, the uranium. And that was what was produced over here in our factory was uranium over here in Illinois.
Well, I have to say it's shocking, because one of the things I've discovered in my reading of John Goffman's, I read these esoteric readings, I'm reading an oral history of John Goffman, that they really did experiment on human beings really from the beginning of their discovery of nuclear radiation. It's one of their they wanted to find out what it could be used for. He said that at the beginning, anytime anybody had anything wrong with them, they basically gave them radiation. They thought that maybe that would work.
Exactly. Well, even the when it was first unearthed down in Shimbabwe, down in Belgium, Congo, where it's at its strongest and purest form, the natives gave it a nickname, the Scalding Rock. It would burn you.
Wow.
It up. So even back then, when it first discovered it back down in Africa, that it was, they gave it a sense of, let's say, mystical properties, and because of that, you know, it was, you know, other people said, well, does it do, it does what? What else can you use this rock for? And again, medical was the first thing they turned to, because turn of the century, it was all, you know, there was no type of regulations or anything of that, or no restrictions.
We seem to be going back to that, Larry.
Mm-hmm. It does, well, in some ways, you know, come full circle. You know, you don't learn mistakes from the past, you repeat them, and this is almost what's going on.
Yeah. Well, you know, as you and I both know, we're pretty contaminated. Our country is extremely contaminated with radiological waste.
It is, and they get away with it because it's invisible.
If right.
The rain was purple, or the dust, or the, you know, the radiation from it, and you could see it in your driveway or in front of your mailbox, you would be outraged. But because you can't see it, you don't complain. It's not on your lawn furniture because you can't see it.
Well,
it's not in your neighbor's yard. You can't see it, but it's there.
That kind of harkens me to that river that the that was let up by the EPA last year. Remember, they allowed that big gigantic waste that this formed this river in Colorado to be like this big yellow. They destroyed really the waterway of a large.
Oh, that was so painful to watch. Oh,
well, you know those people are still suffering from the effects of that. It's not gone
just
away.
Because you don't see it on the news anymore doesn't mean right. They fixed it or it went away.
So this is, I'm glad that you don't mind talking politics, because this is really the meat of it. It's always kind of blown me away how nuclear pollution or any of this pollution could be considered a political issue. It's a health issue. And yet it is considered. People say, well, we don't want to talk about it because we don't. You call up the church, for example. I called up Joyce Meyer Ministry in St. Louis because I know they're right there in St. Louis, right, when I first found out about this.
Yeah.
And their organization said, well, we can't talk about anything political. And I'm like, this isn't political. This is a health issue. They're like, sorry, ma'am, we really can't discuss it. And
well,
yet,
it's considered both, you know, in some aspects, depending on how you, you know, want to look at or the topic you're discussing. Because, you know, politicians gave the okay for a lot of these corporations to do this. So it's like one is a right hand and the other is the left. But they all have to work in conjunction to create this problem. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Well, it's kind of like what's happening with your case, right? Has anything settled on your case? Have you guys made any movement towards resolution, final resolutions?
No. Everything's still where it's supposed to be. You know, it's not going backwards. It's moving forward, which is always good, albeit at a snail's pace. But, you know, it's. I'm waiting for it to, you know, have a successful conclusion. But the we're talking political aspect over here on this side of the river. The thing is, I contacted two congressmen in October and had a meeting with their district directors, Congressman Shimkus and Congressman Bost. They're both Republicans.
Mm-hmm.
And we sat down, me and one of our committee members, and we sat down with them and discussed the residents' problems over here, asking for some help from them. And this is the first time we went through our first time we went to a major political party asking for help. Over the years, our committee has always went to attorneys. The Westlake Landfill people was always going through the political process and wasn't going anywhere. So on the other side of the river over Missouri. So our committee says, well, you know, let's not do what they're doing. Let's go through the legal systems instead. So for years, we went through the legal system, and just now we're starting to go through the political process to try to find help from restitution. And I handed this information off to these congressmen, and, you know, it's been months with nothing moving on their part, you know. So, naturally, you know, not to be discouraged, I'm now contacted two senators that are in this district. Now, the reason I go with two of them is because this factory sits on the border of both of their districts.
Are you talking state senators or federal?
Yeah, state senators. And because the wind blows both directions, you know, it's both of their concern. So that's why I contacted them and sent them information. So I'm going through these two Democratic senators now to try to get some compensation. And again, this is part of the political process that I'm learning and working my way through. And it's not my strong suit, you know. As far as attorneys over the years, I met with many of them, and I know my way through the waters there. But the legal process, I'm still, you know, weaning myself off of, trying to find my way through, and I'm trying to get to the right person with the right attitude, with the right knowledge that can help us. And one of these senators recently sent my information off to the Attorney General, State's Attorney General. And we have a conference phone coming up later this week with him and I believe the State's Attorney.
And now you're talking Illinois State Attorney.
Yes, Illinois, to hopefully find some help for these residents. This senator forwarded the information on to them, and hopefully this will start a process getting some testing done out there in both the yards and the health issues.
This is so astounding, Larry. When I look at what has gone on, if we just piece these things together, and considering that you guys have been flooded out a lot of times, if they really tested the whole area realistically, I venture to say the whole Mississippi River floodplain is just highly radioactive.
I just mailed off the information package to you with photos and documents, and in one of those photos, it shows our factory, like from a helicopter photo, but in the background, you can actually see the Mississippi River. That's how close this factory is to a waterway. And it processed 1 billion pounds of radiologic material. Now, keep in mind, directly
a billion? This processed a billion?
Billion pounds of radiologic. Now, keep in mind, directly across the Mississippi River from this factory was Mallinckrodt, and the exact same place where they processed all the uranium for the very first nuclear reactor in Chicago.
Wow.
And it contaminated both sides of this river in the same spot. So it's amazing what, you know, that's why they called the documentary The First Secret City, because a lot of people don't know that St. Louis was the very first place where uranium was processed and, by the way, uranium radioactive waste was produced. So the very first place, besides where they was milling this and you know bringing it to us, was here in St. Louis. First secret city, and it's a secret, so to speak. No one knows. The very first radioactive waste in this country produced was here.
You know, I have to say that in the last year, or maybe year and a half now, that I've been understanding that St. Louis was even an issue when I started covering it on this radio show. And I've never really encountered people from the Midwest or from St. Louis. And really, their attitude, they are the heart of America. Like the people in your area, they really are the heart of, they have the American spirit, they have American love, they have American integrity, they have been willing to give the benefit of the doubt to their elected officials because they believed that they were working towards a greater good. And I have to say, it does make me want to spit nails to see the way they're all sort of like ham-hawing, looking at their toes, not wanting to take responsibility and face it. Like, to me, not facing what's going on in your area out there, and really with all of the radiological contamination, is so un-American in my view. It is like antithetical to what America, we talk about this being a political issue. Well, to me, how we have handled the radiological waste in this country is so un-American. It's so unconscionable. I am just spitting nails over it. I cannot believe it.
You know, you can say it's an equal opportunity poison because no matter where they dump it, it will affect, harm, or even kill, you know, individuals. No matter, you know, so it's an equal opportunity poison as far as that goes. But if you look at the ratio of where that's produced and the type of people it's affected. For instance, there's a group of people downwind in Arizona, Utah, New Mexico, where they was milling this back in the 40s and 50s, you know, when they first started the nuclear project. And a lot of these Native American Indians who are, you know, let's face it, they were poor and the lowest of the minorities. And a lot of this contamination would blow up across their lands and contaminate them and poison them, and no one ever gave it a second thought. It's same like over here in Illinois right now. The residents living next to this factory where they processed all this radioactive material are all poor and black, and they believe, you know, on the bottom of the scale, it's just not cost-effective to go through all the safety procedures. You know, it just isn't worth it. Property values are too low, things of that nature. So this is the political aspect of this, you know. Sure, there's a, you know, they dump it, they process it here in this state, they did it in this spot in this state, but you keep in mind that they always pick the places where it's either the most remote and won't cause the least harm, or it's the people who live around it have the least, their health effect, they just won't, you know, they took these, you know, North American natives up there in New Mexico when they first started the Manhattan Project. They never thought anything about the fallout. Now they're covered by the federal government. And I'm hoping that I get these residents next door under the same clause because it's in their yards and it went, and they live downwind. So I'm hopefully I can get them the same downwinder status.
Well, it's really astounding. You're right. It is the political aspect is that they only think about the money. This is the thing that our elected officials have gotten way off kilter, is they look at the United States as if it's a corporation. It's not a corporation. It was formed for the greater good, for the general welfare, to help protect us. It's not a corporation. And so their aspect of, let's look at the property values and not the human cost of life and valuing each human
exactly.
being in this country
when
as...
When they start to process this, they look around and says, oh, we could process it here. But they actually should look around and say, should we process it here? And that was always never seems to be the case in looking back on past history of these corporations and their production.
Well, you know, one of the things is that really, where are they going to process it? It's
well,
not
these
about...
residents living next to our factory was here before they built the factory. So they took a conscious decision to start processing this radiological metal in this neighborhood. The neighborhood was already there. You know how they build a factory in one area, and then there's homes that pop up close by, and those are usually employees who can
yeah.
live close to work. That's the way it usually works, you know, for over generations. It's been like that. Well, no, it wasn't like that. It was the opposite. This was a neighborhood they decided to build the factory in. And
wow.
Process the radioactive
so they
metal.
Could have chosen a different location far enough away from people.
No. Now, it was across the street from the United States Army Depot, which I believe why they did it. This was built by the government, this factory. But they didn't want to build it on the Army Depot. It's because they didn't want to inherit the waste and the problems.
Is that the for real reason? Is that what they said?
No. But, you know, it just sort of makes sense because if the government was building a factory to build Army tanks next to Army Depot, which has hundreds of acres, why wouldn't they build it on the Army Depot? Why did they build it across the railroad tracks in this neighborhood?
What year was it born? Was it made? Was it started?
It was built in 1942 to assemble Army tanks. There's two small steel factories behind us. One would build the bottom half of the tank, and the other steel factory manufactured the top half of the tank, or the turret. Well, both parts was brought over to this factory and assembled like an assembly line for like a car, you know, assembly line, and then shipped out the other end. Then it was taken over to the Army Depot, loaded on trains, and shipped off to war. So this factory back in 1942 was built to assemble tanks. So in all honesty, this factory was built to produce death. And it kept producing that death long after the war with their manufacturing radioactive metals.
Wow. Well, when did they start processing the uranium? What year was that again?
Well, the earliest document I have stated, I have actually the original contract of Dow buying this factory from the United States government. There was actually a bidding war between Dow Chemical and United States Air Force for this factory. The United States Air Force wanted this factory so they can start producing aluminum for planes and experimental aircraft. And Dow Chemical wanted it because they wanted to make money. So Dow Chemical won the bid, and in 1941, I have the original contract that shows them buying it from the government. And in it, on the very last page of this contract, it says, and I'm paraphrasing here, Dow Chemical will have unlimited use of uranium and thorium, and then blah, 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 farther down the line it says, and all property belongs to the Atomic Energy Commission. Now, you know,
wow.
Right there they gave them carte blanche to do whatever they want. Again, the Price-Anderson Act comes into effect. It's a law that gives them no culpability in any radiological mishaps, whether it's an accident or a purpose, whatever. It's almost like a free get-out-of-jail card for anybody processing radioactive material. And because of this, these corporations can wheel the stuff around like flour in a bakery, and that's what they did in our factory. It was
like flour in a bakery.
It was. That's exactly what it was like. I mean, I remember against this one wall, inside this one room, was a row of barrels that were just rotting. You know, stuff was oozing out of them. There was holes in them. There was rusting and stuff. And the lids were half on. The lids were being pushed off by whatever was inside. And, you know, it was just nasty, and, you know, no one wanted to deal with it. And that's why it was there for so many years. It was just so radioactive, they couldn't mix it with the other radioactive material. You see, it was...
Oh, my gosh.
The other stuff was low-level considered to what was in these barrels sitting there in this room all these years. And it was where a room that a lot of people worked in. It was a big open room.
You know what's astounding about that? Somebody owned that building.
They still do.
There were managers in that building that saw that. That chose to do nothing about it. That knew what was in there.
$75,000 a year keeps a lot of consciences, people's morals at bay when it comes to things like that.
That's outrageous.
I know.
That's pennies. I mean, even if you paid somebody millions, considering the damage that they would do by ignoring that.
What you're saying. The head manager of this factory, his name was Julius Smith. He, when I first started working there in 1989, he was in charge. He's a plant manager. He was in charge of everything over the plant, all the buildings, all the departments. And he was a hard ass. I mean, you know, nobody liked him. But he wasn't there to make friends, like he said. But he knew all about this, and he downplayed everything. He was with on the company side 100% for a decade, you know, for before I even got there. He was a foreman, and right before he died, he was, you know, he got cancer. He retired. He wanted to come forward with all the information of all this radiation and everything in the past. It wasn't until, you know, he's close to his deathbed that he actually wants to make amends for, you know, everything he saw in the past and maybe accomplish it. And you know, the EPA didn't want to talk to him. They didn't want to discuss it.
Wow.
This was during, I believe, 2006, I guess maybe five. This was during the George Bush administration. And he dies, I believe, 4 months later without being able to pass on any of this information where this radiologicals this factory used for decades. And where, you know, where
did he give any of the information to you?
No.
Too bad he didn't give it to somebody.
I heard this story secondhand from someone who has been involved as much as I have, and I do believe it, you know.
Well, Larry, you're engaged in this. You brought up the EPA. Let me ask you this. You know, the new GOP plan, it's not a new plan. It comes straight from Alan Greenspan of 20 years ago. They plan on closing the Environmental Protection Agency. What do you think? How do you think that that will affect? I mean, I think that their proposal is that they cut out all the government waste, cut out the ineffective Environmental Protection Agency, that these corporations will run themselves correctly and monitor and do the right thing. What do you think is the possibility of that?
Well, one of the aspects of that is that, you know, the EPA, I would see these political parties would sue the EPA over issues that they thought they were right on. And I thought, you know, how can you willfully and knowingly sue the EPA? It's like suing a food pantry for not giving you enough free food. You know, here's an agency that's here to help you and you want to punish them. It doesn't quite make sense on that level, and I never could understand that part. But to what you were saying, you know, politics is involved for a reason. There's money, and if, you know, if there's some way that they can save money, a certain party, they'll do that. And getting rid of the EPA is one of those ways. Will that be helpful to us? A lot of people are absolutely no. But then you try to find the other side of this. You try to play the devil's advocate. Well, would it make lawsuits much easier against the perpetrators? I mean, if you, you know, close a door, you have to open a window, correct? Mm-hmm. So would this actually hope, you know, help in a different direction that we?
So what you're saying is that if you were to sue the EPA,
does that mean it makes it a direct impingement going towards the person who actually did this instead of going through the EPA to go after the person who did it wrong? Will this just open up the door where we could go straight after the person who did it wrong? You know,
well, the question is really,
think of a plan B. If they do close the EPA, you got to find another way around, and this may be a plan B.
Yeah. It's going to be very interesting to see how they, because they do plan on shaking the whole entire government up. It's pretty obvious. Their plan is to, like, knock all these, it's exactly what they did to Chile, frankly, is they knocked all their institutions down, said, okay, you can't, you have to get off the government dole, that the government's not helping you out at all. It's all going to be private institutions. And really, when you do that, it just, it guts, when you gut the government like that, people suffer. There's going to be a lot of suffering. And one of these things that I think is going to be is, what do we do with all this contamination? That the EPA is doing some things. They are doing,
right.
they tend to take the side of the perpetrators, you know, every polluter's advocate, that's their acronym. But
right. That
doesn't mean that they're doing nothing. You know what I mean? They are
doing
something.
Well, the you know, the thing is, the government in charge now, I don't have anything bad to say about, because, you know, I may need them someday to help us, and I don't want to be hypocritical and come back and say, you know, oh, I really need your help, I think you can help us, when I say something that could be detrimental, which, you know, again, that's not me. You know, this is who we have in charge, okay? Well, let's see him. Let's ask him for help. Let's see if he helps us. Let's see what he can do. And if it gets to that point where he can't help us, you know, thank God. God bless America. If not, then we have to find another avenue to receive the help and recognition to all our problems from this contamination. And that's
yeah, the contamination is so overwhelming. I mean, it is so shocking when you really look at it. And I understand why people don't want to pay attention to it, because it is really overwhelming. Like, there really is almost virtually, practically the entire United States is virtually touched by, in every, so many places have nuclear contamination. And if it's not nuclear, if it's not polluted with nuclear contamination, then there's something else. I mean, but these abandoned uranium mines are all over. The waste from the Manhattan Project is, we haven't even discovered where they've put all of it, have we?
No, good Lord, no. In fact, you know, putting a moniker on it like low level makes it sound like it's safe, or calling it natural uranium,
right,
or, you know, natural materials makes it sound like it's safe, but it's actually not, because, you know, for a comparison, get an X-ray. Well, one X-ray is comparatively safe, the radiation is, but what we're talking about is repeated X-rays. It's the
24 hours a day, 7 days
a
week.
The accumulation of these exposures continuously that add up to be a more serious than a low-level exposure. And that's what happened to these residents next door to this factory here in Madison, Illinois. Now, we was talking earlier about politicians and ones who can help and ones that can see our situation from their point of view. And one of them, I got a phone call from a senator over in Missouri a few nights ago, Senator Maria Nadal Chappelle. No, Maria Chappelle Nadal, yes.
Nadal, yeah.
Yes, and she is a wonderful woman who seems to care very much about the anti-nuclear movement, and because her district, one of the district represents, is actually Coldwater Creek.
Right.
And the residents out there. And she never had no idea what happened on this side of the river until just a few weeks ago when I spoke with her.
Wow.
And she goes, how can something, you know, this big happen so close and nobody knows about it? And I said, well, that's the way these corporations designed it. They make sure the employees are paid a good money, so if they lose their job, they would be in a lot of, you know, being hurt.
Right.
They make sure that they'll keep their mouth shut and, you know, again, you know, use their job and fear to make sure that nobody complained. So, you know,
I think that's stunning. That's a stunning statement, though, Larry, that she did not know about the contamination in Illinois or Niagara Falls.
Mm-mm.
Wow.
No. Now,
and did you tell her about that story about the guy cutting up the machinery and dumping somewhere?
Well, see, it's in her state. So I was trying to see the DNR, Department of Natural Resources, It's the equivalent to the Illinois EPA. It's a state EPA agency, the DNR in Missouri. And I've had them looking for this radioactive material for several months now, for 6-7 months. Now, the environmental investigator who's looking for it, it's on the bottom of his list of 30 things to look for. One is tires in a ditch, another one is appliances dumped on the side of the road, things of this nature. Well, I've been trying to get them to put it on the top of their priority list to find this radioactive material and to safely remove it. And I've been doing this by several means. One was I contacted the local congressman down in that district, down in Polk County, Missouri. Now, the reason I called down there is this is where we believe the gentleman who cut it up took it and buried it. He told employees inside the factory that he was cutting it up, and he was going to take it down to his father's farm down in Missouri and bury it. That's what he told a lot of people he was working with in this factory.
That's stunning.
And then when we found the back half of the machinery abandoned on the back half on the back road, we had the everybody investigated, including the Illinois EPA, because this machine ran 3 million pounds of uranium, and now it's sitting abandoned on a back road. Well, what happened was the gentleman who was cutting it up was towing the back half, the least radioactive part, to a scrapyard.
Oh my gosh!
And he was hoping to get it past the metal detectors or the radiation detectors that they would accept it. And he was pulled over and ticketed because it was unsafe. It was huge. You'll have a photograph of it. And the thing about this is that on that ticket, he had his, you know, they wrote down the information on his driver's license, including his address. And he lived on his father's farm, and on his, you know, the ticket is his address. So the gentleman at the Illinois EPA looked it up on MapQuest, went back to 2005, and we seen where it was. Huge chunks of his property were dug up and buried. Stuff was buried on it. Exactly what he was told the employees inside he was doing with it, taking it to his father's farm and burying it. So we actually have all the proven documentation, you know, and witnesses to back up this story of this radioactive press buried out in southern Missouri. So Ms. Nadal, she was amazed by this story, and she told me she wants a conference call later this week with me, her, and the lieutenant governor of the state of Missouri. And I asked her why she wants to get him involved, and she goes, he's from Polk County.
Mm-hmm.
So this affects his family, his friends, and his neighbors.
Well, can't they get a, what do they call, a search warrant?
I believe he'll be the person to get the DNR to make this a priority in finding it. See, because the gentleman at the DNR told me, he says, well, the only way we can make, you know, put this to the top of our list is if someone of importance or someone above me tells me to. I didn't know if he said that as a clue, as a hint, like, you know, call someone. But I called the congressman down there in Polk County. He didn't want to help. I called the state's attorney down there. He didn't want to help. So now I'm hoping this lieutenant.
Couldn't you call the police department and ask them to get a search warrant? Can't they get a search? Isn't that illegal?
There's only four people that work in City Hall. It's so small of a county.
Oh wow, really?
In fact, the county prosecutor told me they couldn't go after anything like this because, you know, they go after dog bites, car wrecks, and theft. That's about it.
Not murder.
Nothing like that. No.
I mean, really, this amounts to murder. You know, this is really.
If you look at the aerial photos, you can actually see small ponds and all around the site where we believe this was buried on the farm. So there's and homes, other people living around it as well. Even though it's out in the country, you can still see them in the photos. Wow. So I'm hoping that this lieutenant governor will tell the head of the DNR to make this a priority and to put it on the top of their list, not number 30 or 40, and to find this. And we believe the gentleman who took it down there and buried it will have no problem telling us where it's at and giving us all the information we need. I believe he's a victim as much as me and the workers inside. I believe he was taken advantage of, just like me and the co-workers inside. You know, he only worked there long enough to cut this up and haul it away. Then the owner just got rid of him. I mean, he used
Wow.
And all the years he cut this radioactive material up with these torches, he breathed in all that smoke and that close contamination. Okay. He may have health issues from this, derived from his exposure.
How many years ago was that, Larry, that he did that?
2005, November 2005.
No doubt he's got health issues.
Now, if he does, 12 years later. I could sign him up for workers' compensation for radiation poisoning.
Now, that'd be ironic.
Yes, even though he may have committed a felony transporting radioactive material out of a government facility and transporting across state lines without license or permits, that's a serious charge. But I believe he was paid to do this, and the person who paid him to do this is the responsible party, and that's the owner of the factory.
Do you know where this man is? Have you found him?
He was arrested last October for plates. I looked it up on the internet not too long ago, and he had illegal or expired plates, and he was in the courthouse in November, pleaded guilty to it, and paid a fine, which is right down the hallway from the county, from the state prosecutor or the county prosecutor I spoke to. I said, he was just down the hallway from you 3 weeks ago. You can't get him? And he goes, nope.
So, does he know that he perpetrated a felony? He probably has no idea. He's probably completely...
Well, I sent him a documents packet, an information packet.
Oh, you
and
did.
I even had him confirm everything with the DNR and with the Illinois EPA.
Oh, Lord, that's to put the fear of God in him there, Larry. He'll never find him now.
No. Nobody knows. But he doesn't know about this yet. See, it isn't public, and I hope he doesn't watch your show or listen to your show. So So I'll take a chance by talking about this.
I don't think he does.
By name, but I know this is one way to fix a problem. We found the back half of this machine that ran 3 million pounds of uranium on the back road 10 years ago, and I believe we finally found the front half, the most radioactive part of it, 10 years later, down in this field, down in southern Missouri. And I believe this lieutenant governor who was raised, born and raised down there, who cares about that community, will, again, get the DNR down there to have them dig it up. And then once it's all done and safe, then for restitution, go back to the owner of the factory to pay for the cleanup and for fines levied against him.
Well, let me ask you this. Is that, I mean, the man who hauled it off, who cut it up and may have buried it in southern Missouri, in a way, he's kind of a victim because... He was not advised. I mean, do you think that he was actually advised of the danger of this piece of? I mean, he knew he had something hot, but
we have no proof of that either. You know,
it's astounding.
The owner of this factory has been in danger of this for years, so it just makes sense. It's reasonable to believe that they did the same with him as well.
That he didn't know what he was doing. Yeah,
they could have told him, "Oh man, no, we can't sell this, and we can't take it to a scrapyard." You know. He could have gave him an excuse. There's lead all over it. Or he could have said it's low-level radiation, not enough to hurt you, but enough that nobody will take it. You know, some kind of, you know, downplay it in a way, so it didn't seem as a concern.
Well, for sure, Larry, we know the man that did this work for sure 10, 12 years later, no doubt, has some type of physical ailments going on right now that he has no idea why
his
it's
father,
been lost.
His father has a dog in this fight because it's buried on his farm.
Wow.
See, in all rights, there's a possibility, you know, his farm can be condemned and he would move off of it and could never sell it. Now, I hope that does not happen because he's an innocent victim in all this, as his son is, I believe. And, again, I would hope he would want to help and cooperate, and I believe he could actually sue the owner down the road for allowing this material to leave his site and to be wind up in his yard. So again, I'm trying to find the good to come from something bad.
It's so stunning. I mean, I have to say it's completely, every time I hear you explain this story and how it came to pass, I'm my breath is just taken away at the lack of concern for human life at every level of government. At every level of the agency, anything handling nuclear is almost like they're trying to convince us that nuclear really doesn't kill anybody, when in fact it's the most toxic thing there is. It's beyond comprehension that we have a whole entire political system at the foundation of it being willing to lie about the harm that this is causing people. It's just beyond breathtaking to me. I don't know how you guys live with it, to be honest.
It's a mindset, you know. Well, that was back in the 60s. You know, and that makes you think, well, that was back then. It ain't happening no more. What you don't understand is it happened in the 60s, but it never left. It's still there, the danger, the radiation, the poison. See, but they don't go follow through with that thought, you know. When they say, oh, it happened back in the 60s, it, and they stop right there, it gives it the appearance, oh, well, then it's gone. You don't have to worry about it. They're not doing it anymore. Well, that's the poisons that are low-level toxins that you have to have a daily exposure to like this. We're talking about this radiation. Is once they quit in the 60s and 70s and 80s producing this radioactive material, it's what was left over that continues to be the danger. It's as if they're still producing it.
Yes.
The mindset. It's the mindset.
It's like the neighborhood where this factory was. Have they done any testing on the people in the area near the neighborhood where this factory was in Illinois?
I'm proud to be the one to say that in the 50 years that this factory processed radiological metal, I'm so proud to say that I'm the first person to get and someone to actually test their yards for the very first time. It took a good 7-8 lawyers to go through till I finally found one to spend enough money for testing. And we found elevated levels of uranium and thorium and beryllium in their yards, the same three elements that was processed inside the factory. And I sent the findings off to a physicist, the uranium that we found in their yards, and compared to the uranium that was processed in our factory, the same readings. And he took them down there, and I sent him copies, and they're the same radiological signature. Now, they're different amounts, of course, but the same signature, meaning the uranium in their yards is the same type that was produced in the factory.
And are there elevated incidences of childhood diseases and cancers in that area?
In those two blocks that we tested, we have over 75 cancers in those two blocks, and there's 31 homes.
That oh, my gosh.
Two cancers for every house.
Wow. And what about that's childhood illnesses?
That's a different thing, too. Respiratory problems is really high. There's an elementary school located exactly 20 feet from this factory downwind. 5 teachers and a principal died of cancer. Who knows how many children playing on that playground were exposed day after day. Walking down the sidewalks. Good Lord. This stuff would come out of the factory, not out of smokestacks. It would come out of the roof, out of the exhaust fans.
That is so outrageous.
Oh, they had no filters, no screens, no dust collectors.
You
and
know,
when they got done melting this radioactive material, the sludge that they would scrape off the top when they're processing it, they piled it up next to their homes on empty lot, also upwind. So not only was they getting contamination from the particulates raining down from the air as they were producing it, but then they was getting it from the radioactive waste site next to their homes that sat there for 30 years above ground. It looked like a giant sand dune.
That is so...
That's what it would look like.
You know...
Isn't that amazing?
I am just, you know, what's really stuns me is that Maria Chappelle Nadal is really the only person that I've seen who has really leaned into this. She's the only one who is just like outraged.
Well,
I've had
a person tell me, don't get associate yourself with her. She's very, very radical. And you know what I have to say about that? You know, well, that's your opinion.
You know why she's considered radical? Because she's willing to talk about it.
And
that's why
no
she's radical.
With that. I have no problem with that, you know. In fact, you know, people in power usually have the most, the biggest voice, and she being a senator is very helpful. Having these two senators send our information off to the attorney general, I have a phone conference call with later this week, you know, that's very helpful. Hopefully to get the lieutenant governor involved in finding that radioactive press down in Missouri, that would be helpful. Again, this is the politics part that can be helpful. Now, you can talk about the negative all day long, and you'll find it, as long as you talk about it. But try to find the part that's helpful, because that is what's helpful. That will make your case. That will, you know, go to the next level and find help and compensation for people. Finding negativity doesn't do that.
I so admire your positive attitude towards all of this, Larry. I mean, I guess this is a thing that the people of St. Louis and you personally have shown me is that really, because I'm beginning to realize that we're swimming in this nuclear waste. There's no getting out of it. We are the frogs in the pot of water.
And accepting it is not one of the possibilities either. You just can't accept it. I mean, a lot of people have because, again, they don't think it affects them.
That's why they don't want to talk about it.
It isn't until you see a guy walking around in a moon suit in your backyard that you say, hey, maybe I ought to get involved. You know, it's sort of sad. I'm one of those people. I mean, I didn't notice it until I was sick from it, and then I looked it up, and that's where I'm at today. So I'm one of those people as well. I understand that. In fact, I produced this radioactive material in our factory at one time, and unknowingly, though, at the time, but nonetheless, you know, I knew it was being processed there. I could have spoke up and said something, but then they would have got rid of me, and my family would have suffered. And so I'm guilty. I am. But I'm trying to make amends to that. I'm trying to absolve myself from the guilt, from being a part of that cog, being one of the cogs in that wheel of producing this waste. And I'm using all my experience and my knowledge and what I've learned and seen over the years from this factory and the way it's produced and the way it's handled, and try to pass it on to the next person who cares or interested, or even the next generation.
Well, I think we're all, at least I think most of us, anybody over 40, I would say, is responsible for just going along with it and not having the curiosity. I know I'm guilty of that, not having had the curiosity enough to question what I thought, you know, the information.
Well, we have to give the hippies a break because, you know, they went through a time of life where it was a little more mellow.
Well, what's interesting is at the time when the whole 60s movement, I thought about this, the whole time when the 60s movement was coming along, was at the time when the harm that nuclear was doing to the human body and to our environment was being exposed by scientists like Dr. Pauling, Dr. Goffman.
People started taking issues at hand and protesting him for the first time. You never seen that in the 50s. They would have called you a communist.
Right.
You know? But in the 60s, in late 60s, you know, you started seeing protests for certain issues, and anti-nuclear movement was strong back then.
Strong. And, Dr. Helen Caldicott got 1 million people in the streets. And yet, even then, people did not know what was going on with the first secret city. They did not know what had happened to St. Louis. They did not. I mean, and this is the positive. This is why I say, when people say, how can you bear to talk about this? For me, I think us being able to face it is an act of love. I view this as something positive, because we can't fix it until we face it. And so,
way to put it. That's very,
you know, and it is a matter of, I'm hopeful. I don't want to turn away from it, because I believe once we turn around and face it square on, it may be a big mountain to climb, and we do have a big, huge, gigantic system that seems so overwhelming. But we have our no. We have a line in the sand that we're not going to cross, and facing it allows us to find solutions.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
I think it's sort of positive. I look at this. This is why.
If you think of it as a new environment, or not environmental, a new economic boom. Okay, you know, over the past decades, it was the space industry. You know, sending men in space was, billions of jobs, billions of dollars. And it was economic boom. Well, they could do the same as this. They want to turn around, make finding radioactive waste a cleanup and an economic job, to hire hundreds of thousands of people to do this, go around a company and renovate all these places and sites that are contaminated. And it could be an economic boom, putting people to work.
It could be a scientific renaissance, really, because science has stagnated. So maybe we could have a scientific renaissance. I mean, this is the thing, they're working on turning us into biochipped human beings, you know what I mean? But I mean, I think that if we really face this and change the attitude about admitting what we've allowed to pass in a very short period of time, this last 100 years is really when the bulk of the harm is done. So if we look at the long-term history of human life, I mean tens of thousands of years, we really, if we just face what we've done in the last 100 years, we could probably spend another 10,000 years trying to figure out how to resolve the harm that we've already caused to our planet. I mean, this is a serious issue. This is not something small, but I think
10,000 years, we would all come together and under the same umbrella and under the same realization that this is a bad thing. All parties, no matter what side political party you're on, everyone needs to agree there is nothing good about having this anywhere in our country. It's worse than having a terrorist. It's the same thing. It causes the same thing, death and pain and suffering.
It is a terrorist.
Think of it along that line. You know, you're ridding the country of an invisible terrorist, radioactive waste.
That's a really good way to put it, because actually, you know what, Larry, I think I'm going to steal that one, because it really is. It really is. Truly, it really is. And this whole idea, and frankly, the whole idea of ignoring it is pumping up the system of the terror, because it does create terror in people. People are so afraid of it.
For the Bush generation, they got everything they wanted because there was nuclear weapons in Iraq. And because of that, and because of the 9/11, they got everything they wanted because of fear. I think one of the quotes George Bush said was, be afraid, be very afraid, in one of his speeches. And you know, that's sort of not what America I was raised to believe was, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you don't have nothing to fear but fear itself. No, that's the way I was raised, in that kind of environment. And to hear the new president say, you know, we got to be afraid of this, we got to be afraid of the terrorists.
The media is the enemy of the public.
Why don't we deal with the terrorists that are in the country now, and that is this radioactive waste? Again, the invisible
Exactly.
terrorists.
Well, it would be nice if we could just have an honest, I mean, who was it that told you, you know, where was that person that told you Maria Chappelle Nadal was a radical, don't get associated with her? I mean, this is how they demean people. This is, and frankly, I've had people share that same thing with people saying about my show.
I don't think it was some, it wasn't an anti-nuclear type person or anything of that nature who told me. This was a person who was more concerned about me, thinking, well, you know, guilt by association. If they think this person is crazy, maybe they think what you say is as well. And I go, you know, I'll make that decision on my own. You know, I like advice from people. I don't mind people telling me things, but I'm one of those person who, because of this factory, I just don't trust anyone at face value to begin with. I have to do my research, look them up, find them. Because this factory was supposed to look out for our safety and our best interest, and they took advantage of that trust. So I don't trust people as freely as I used to. But at the same time, as Ms. Nadal is concerned, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Mm-hmm. Well, look, why don't you tell our listeners exactly where the factory is? I know we didn't even go over your bit of history because you've come on a few times. But why don't you tell them where the factory is?
It's right here in St. Louis, Missouri, on the Illinois side of the river. It's about maybe 5 miles north on up the Mississippi. On the Illinois side is a factory in Madison, Illinois. It's actually located in Venice. The borderline runs through the middle, so it lists its address as Madison. And in this town of Venice, if you go north, you'll see this factory, sprawling index complex, just sitting there in the middle of this community. And if you notice, all the homes will be downwind, every one of the community. And if you look this up on MapQuest and zoom in, you'll see it for yourself, what it looks like today. And, you know, this is the factory of death. This is a factory that started building tanks in World War II, continued producing radioactive material and death long after that.
Well, that's the only thing that nuclear can do, is produce death. I mean, that is the purpose of it. I mean, this is the thing that they want us to forget, is that that's really what it does.
Oh, even nuclear medicine, it's death, because it tries to kill the cancer.
Right.
So even in medicine, to help you, it's still toxic. It's still there to kill, and it's to kill the cancer, hopefully.
Yeah, well, you know, there's a lot of doctors in the United States who won't use that, have stopped using it, because they've noticed most of their patients die anyways. So it's not actually an effective thing, but they keep experimenting. There's a politician here in Oregon who thinks that all of us should be drinking radioactive waste. Seriously, his name is Art Robinson. He keeps trying to vie for the congressional seat of our Congressman Pete DeFazio. And this man genuinely believes if everyone drinks a little, he had his children drinking radioactive waste so that their bodies could acclimate to it. Seriously, this is how lunatic these people are. And that is kind of a meme that they want us to pretend. Like, I saw a documentary, Earth Crying, Earth Rising, I think it's called.
Yes, I think I've seen that.
Did you see those girls in that documentary? The girls were saying, well, you know, people want to say that, uranium harms people, and it doesn't. It doesn't cause any problems. People are just being convinced against facts, against real science, that uranium is just not that harmful, that radiation is just not that bad, that it's not that bad.
Again, the people who are profiting from this want to downplay it as much as possible and in any way possible. And, that's one of the ways they do that. I mean, again, they try to justify the means to the end when they look at themselves in a mirror, whatever that be. But when it comes down to it, their people are damaged, harmed, and killed by this, by what they're doing. No matter how they say, well, we're doing a very minimum, it doesn't matter. You're still doing it. So
Well, how are
people
you
blame.
physically, Larry? I mean,
Well,
if you don't
I
mind
can
me
walk this
asking.
week. I wasn't able to walk last week. I
Wow.
have burns covered on more than half my body, it looks like. Again, I have arthritis in almost every joint.
And the burns are from the
My exposure.
exposure.
Underneath that uranium dust all those years.
And
I also
you
have
still
throat
have the
problems.
burn. The burns still happen, or did it just happen
Well,
then?
there's scabs all over my body from it.
Wow, even still. This is one of the things people don't understand. The reason I
Oh,
hope you
I
don't mind
started
me
getting
asking
worse.
this.
When they got rid of me at the factory was when I was at my worst.
Wow.
I had red splotches of skin, raw skin, weeping all over my body. It looks very reminiscent to those Japanese after the World War II, the color photographs you would see, or the color
Wow.
stuff of the Japanese after the bombing Hiroshima and Nagasaki. It looked very similar to that. And I didn't, when I made that connection, it was really startling because I'd never thought of the radiation being the root of my problem, causing my health problems until that moment. That was sort of
Wow.
the oh shit moment.
Yeah. And there's no going back. That's the hard part, is there's
Oh
no going back.
no.
You
I
can't
try to take
undo it.
No, they can't put the genie back in the bottle, so to speak.
Wow. Well, I opened up the map. We have about 2 minutes left, but there's a lot of homes on that area where
Yeah,
that
and
is.
again,
There's a
all
lot
downwind.
of
And again, we
homes.
have our committee documented over 360 cancers in a 6-block area. And I counted them, and there's only 186 homes. So that's, again, almost two cancers per every house. But I spoke with the person who, one of our committee members who did the health issues. It's sort of like this. We had five cancers in one house. We had two in another. So it isn't two in every actual house. It just equals that. And for instance, we had a family, the mother, the father, the son, and two daughters. All five of them had cancer in the house. Each
I'm
one
so
was a
sorry.
completely different cancer. We had another house where a gentleman got cancer. He passed away. The new guy bought the house, moved in. He got cancer, went to a nursing home, sold the house. The new guy moved in. Years later, he got cancer.
Wow.
Things of
Yeah,
that
so
nature.
that's
So
pretty
we have
compelling
multiple cancers
evidence.
in these homes and things of this nature, which actually and brings this total up to 360. And that's really sort of an impromptu survey because these are just the people who would come to our committee and give us this information freely.
Well, Larry, we have about 30 seconds left. You've been
Oh.
listening to Larry Bergen, who is a victim of, I guess, World War II poisoning, the Manhattan Project. He lives in Illinois. I hope you'll join us again, Larry, in, 3 to 4 weeks. I love having you on the show.
Thank
It's
you.
been real. And hopefully something will be have some movement in between then. Please do put your courage feet on, take action, get engaged, because really democracy only works if we do. I know a lot of people are skeptical, but we can lean into it. There are things we can do. Thank you, Larry, for joining us. I hope you'll join us again. We'll talk to you soon.